adapt, and improvise. That's important for a soldier. Every well-thought-out plan never goes according to plan. Adapt and improvise. I have a wonderful little PowerPoint here, but we don't have a connection for an iPad mini. Adapt and improvise. Years ago, Marty Williamson used to give little lessons called Lessons from the Boy. He was a young father, and his child was young, and he learned a lot of lessons from his son, and he would bring them to us. And I thought about that. And our children do probably teach us more than we teach our children. Well, I was out working probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I saw something on a lawn neighboring one of my customers. Started my wheels turning. And I thought, lessons from the lawn. Whoops, hang on here. I've got to run my own slideshow. Maybe I'm not even going to get to do this, eh? Hang on a second. Why is this not working now? Okay. So I was getting out of my trailer, getting my mowers out, and I looked down at the curb of this neighbor's to my customer's lawn. And I noticed what they had done is they wanted to keep the grass from growing over the edge. So they took out their string trimmer and they just buzzed it right down to the ground. Just real short. Scalped it. Those of you who have run a string trimmer, you understand that the string trimmer, it does not cut. It whips. It tears. And it beats down. So I'm thinking about this as I'm mowing the lawn. And thinking about this scalped edge and how it's getting beat down all the time, and what happens when you beat down the grass all the time. It becomes unhealthy. That grass becomes unhealthy. And when things are unhealthy, when hot, dry weather or affliction comes, it withers and dies. It goes away or goes dormant. The other thing that happens when you beat down the grass with a weed whip, you have to beat it down frequently in order for it to keep its shape. People have this thought that if I mow my grass as short as I possibly can, I won't have to mow it near as often. It's not true. In order for you to keep it that shape, you have to mow it more frequently because it starts to get hairy and spindly and out of shape. The other things that happen when you take a weed trimmer, a string trimmer, and you buzz it down and you've made it weak, parts of it dies out and it becomes thin. What happens when you have thin grass? What grows in there?
Weeds
grow in there. Weeds grow in. They creep in. And so I'm thinking about this as I'm taking care of my customer. I do things a little bit differently. I use an edger along the curb and along the sidewalks. The edger is a steel blade, and after time it becomes very sharp. because it's grinding against the concrete. It makes it sharp. But it spins at an incredible rate. And you take this edger and you go along the sidewalk or the curb, pruning back the grass. Think about that for a minute. I'm pruning my grass. They're beating down and whipping their grass. So this sharp steel shapes the grass. And because the grass is not beat down, it stands up tall. And it's thick. And with it being healthy, standing tall and thick, it's more apt to handle the dry, hot weather or the affliction. The other thing that I find very interesting about this is I don't have to do this weekly. I don't have to go out there and edge this edge weekly. I maybe do it once or twice a month. Whereas if you're using a string trimmer, you have to beat that down every week to keep it shape. If I have a thick, healthy lawn that's standing tall, I tell my customers that's your best herbicide. That keeps the weeds out. So what's the object lesson from the lawn? As I was thinking about this, I was thinking about our words. Harsh words can be like a string trimmer. Harsh words can whip and tear. Harsh words can beat you down and make you sick. Harsh words make you unhealthy, allowing room for weeds to creep into your life. I thought about Proverbs 15 and 1. It says, harsh words stir up anger. Harsh words stir up anger. But what does a kind word do? It heals. Kind words build up and encourage. Kind words help you stand tall and to be healthy. Kind words also make you feel like you fit in. Have you ever been somewhere where you just don't feel like you fit in? And people maybe just ignore you? But what about that person who comes up and says something to you like, hi, how are you? My name's Kelly. And they start a conversation. You know, it's just that easy. That person is just as nervous as you are. But a kind word comes out of your mouth and it opens them up for conversation. What if I saw a stranger in a room and I went up to him and I said, man, that shirt is ugly. You'd be on the defense right away. You wouldn't feel like you fit in. Proverbs 16 and 24 says, pleasant words are like honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Has anybody ate honeycomb? What's it like? It's sweet. It's kind of waxy. But you can chew on it for a while. And that sweetness stays in your mouth. It stays with you for quite a while as you chew on it. But it says that these words are sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Have you had a broken bone? Do your bones ache? Have you had shin splints? You understand what it feels like. It's a nagging pain. And it won't go away. If you have a broken bone, how long does it take to heal? 6 to 8 weeks. You have to endure that for 6 to 8 weeks. But what does a kind word do for you? It heals those bones. It helps you to persevere through that affliction. Kind words are sweet, and we crave sweetness, don't we? Did you ever go to a church meeting where Tom Woody was at? Did you ever notice that he was rarely by himself? Why was that? Because the words that he spoke were sweet. And you craved it. And you enjoyed those words. How many people do you want to crave that are maybe the prickly porcupine that has abrasive words? A lot of times, the only friends they have are those people who choose the same kind of language. Hebrews 4 and 12 says, God's words are sharper than any two-edged sword. It penetrates even to the dividing of the soul and spirit, joints and marrow. It judges the thoughts and the attitudes of the heart. What can we take from this? God's words are sharp. They're God's words. They're not our words. It's God's words that's going to cut to the heart. It's God's words that are going to judge. God's words do not whip. They do not beat you down. They do not tear. But God's words judge the thoughts and the attitudes of the heart. Man can't do that. We can bring the words to those people. They can read those words. It's up to them to allow those words to penetrate the heart. It's up to them to allow that sword to divide the bone and marrow. You know, I talked a little bit about the edger. And when I take that down the walk, it doesn't rip or tear out the grass. It prunes it. And it makes it stand up straight. And God prunes us from time to time. Hebrews chapter 12 talks about His discipline. God knows exactly how to discipline us all. He knew us while we were being knit together in our womb. So we need to be careful that our words are not beating one another up. And that takes us to what happens when someone starts growing over the edge. I want to take you to Galatians 6, verses 1 through 2 and verse 4. It says, brothers, if someone is caught in a sin, you who are spiritual should restore him gently. But watch yourself, or you may be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Each one should test his own actions, then he can take pride in himself without comparing himself to somebody else, for each should carry his own burden. This verse is kind of confusing, isn't it? Didn't it just say, help one another? Carry one another's burdens. And then at the end it says, each one's got to carry his own burden. Well, there is personal responsibility You are responsible for your own. But if you see a brother who's caught up in sin, help them carry their load. Build a relationship with that person. Just don't go up there and tell them they're doing wrong. Go to them and say, you know what? I know being a Christian is hard. It's tough. I can see you're struggling. What can I do to help you? Which words are better? Which words are sweet? I also want to consider another part in this passage. It says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. What was the law of Christ? What is the law of Christ? We discussed it last Sunday night in children's class. It was the parable of the Samaritan who come across the man who was beat down and laid on the ground along the road. And what was he telling the rich young ruler? Before he gave him the parable, he said to love one another. To love one another. Build each other up. That's fulfilling the law of Christ. Using sweet words to encourage and to build up. Romans 15, 1 through 4 reads, we who are strong ought to bear with the failings of the weak, and not to please ourselves. Each one should please his neighbor for his good, to build him up, for even Christ did not please himself. For everything that was written in the past to teach us, so that through endurance and encouragement of the encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope. Now, I admit that in chapter 14, we're talking about foods that are good to eat. And not being upset with somebody if they eat food offered to idols and so forth. But I think this applies also to the brother or to the sister who's having a hard time. Because we need to remember what God told us in 2 Peter. He said that God is patient, wanting all men to be saved. If He wants all men to be saved, shouldn't we try to encourage one another? Because we do recognize that being Christian is hard. It goes against everything that our body wants to do. Some other verses to consider is 1 John 4, 7, and 7 through 21, and Jude 22, verses 22 through 23. And I'd like to just focus here on this for a minute, what Jude says. Jude says, some people you have to use mercy. And some people you snatch them from the fire. If you don't have a relationship or you don't understand how that person works, how are you going to know which one you're supposed to use? When I was in my 20s, I had long hair and a pierced ring, ear. My wife called it a mullet, but it was not a mullet. I had long hair all over. My mantra came from a chorus of the Charlie Daniels Band. In it, it said, if you don't like the way I'm living, you just leave this long-haired country boy alone. If you would have come up to me at that point in my life, and you would have tried to snatch me from the fire, I might have just told you off. and told you where you can go. But my elders at that point, they showed me mercy. Maybe they knew a little more about me than I did. I'm very grateful for those elders who showed me mercy, who every time I stepped through the door, even though they shook their heads and probably smelled some alcohol on my breath, they still slapped me on the back. Well, one of them slapped me on the back pretty hard. But I loved that. The other man was nice, kind, and gentle. And I loved them both for that. I'm sure my appearance, they looked at it and said, "This guy's struggling." I'm sure they prayed for me. And I think that's something to think about when we read Jude verses 22 and 23. We need to make sure we know how that person acts. I have children that as soon as I start talking, they shut down. They quit listening to me. So I've got to be very careful about how I instruct them. And a lot of times, close your ears, kids, I say, "Hey, Allison, could you do this for me?" Because my kids are very receptive to their mother. And I remember my growing up. My dad started talking to me. I'm like, "Oh man, you don't know nothing." But I would listen to my mom. It takes two. We need to make sure that we are letting God's word cut to the heart. We need to make sure that we're not taking God's word and bludgeoning one another with the word. When I think about this, I think about the Pharisees. Why do you suppose? Well, there was probably a lot of reasons why Jesus had a hard time with the Pharisees. But they were always trying to impose something on the people that was hard. They were always trying to bludgeon the people, the sinner. They were always trying to stone that person. Do you remember the time where they brought this prostitute to Jesus? And they asked him, "Well, what do you do? Do you stone her?" What did Jesus do? He kneeled down, started drawing around the dirt. They thought they were being ignored. "What do you do, Jesus? What do you do?" What did he say? "Those of you without sin, you go ahead and cast the first stone." What'd they do? They started walking away. They started walking away because they knew. They knew they had sin in their life. What did Jesus tell the woman? "You stupid woman, don't do that no more." No. He did exactly what I need. He forgave her. Said, "Don't do it again." Did she do it again? I have no idea. I know that when Jesus forgives me and says, "Don't do it again," I'm of the flesh and I'm weak and I do it again. But at that point, I realize I need my Father. I need my Savior. Here's some final thoughts. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, 5 through 7. "If anyone has caused you grief, he has not so much grieved me as he has grieved all of you. To some extent, not to put it too severely, the punishment inflicted on him by the majority is sufficient for him." Did you catch that? The punishment inflicted on him by the majority is sufficient for him. "Now instead you ought to forgive and comfort, so that he will not be overwhelmed by excessive sorrow." Did you catch that? overwhelmed by excessive sorrow? Who here beats us up more than we beat our own self up? Why do you have to heap more on me? I've already beat myself up. You don't have to heap more on me. I don't have to heap more on me. We need to be careful about this excessive sorrow thing. Because this excessive sorrow thing is a tool of Satan. Because you get to the point where you think there's no hope for you. I can remember a few years back, I had a problem. In that fall, I took my son down to Clarinda to camp out. I had imposed my own thoughts on what people were saying about me. They were all sitting around the campfire, and I would think I would see them looking at me and snickering, or looking at me and pointing at me. And it made me feel horrible. Until this one woman came up to me, and she said, "I'm glad you're here." And I realized they weren't pointing at me. They weren't making fun of me. They weren't judging me. And a lot of times we can do that. We can beat ourselves up so much and make ourselves so sick that we think the other person is judging us. And maybe that's sometimes why we lose our youth. Colossians 3:13. Forgive as God has forgiven you. 2 Peter 1:5 through 8. This is paraphrased. It says, "Supplement your faith with brotherly affection, and with brotherly affection love. This quality will keep you from being ineffective or unfruitful." Did you hear that part? Brotherly affection and brotherly love will keep you from being unfruitful or ineffective. Tom read this morning. Oh, I can't remember the passage now, but I do remember him. It's Matthew, right? Luke. And what did he say in the second verse? He said, "The harvest is great, but the workers are few." How do you be an effective worker? Brotherly love and affection will keep you from being unfruitful. This is the one that I like. I just found it the other day, and it makes a lot of sense to me. It's Proverbs 12 and 25. It says, "Anxiety weighs down the heart, but a kind word cheers it up." Isn't that true? It's hard to be a Christian. We let ourselves down. We let people down. People let us down. We see things that are wrong. We get frustrated. Anxiety weighs down the heart. I'm going to give you one last little story that I think fits this. I don't want you to judge these people because I'm going to use their name. But this was back when John Morris was trying to be an evangelist, and he was riding around with Tom Woody. And they had just got done with a meeting, and they're driving to who knows where. And John is lamenting to Tom, Why won't the people just listen? Why won't they just do what they say or what God tells them to do? Why are the people always fighting among themselves? Tom's response was, sounds like you're frustrated. What's the reason for being frustrated? Is it a lack of faith? Is it the fact that you think that your problem is so special that you don't think God's going to help you out? I think that was a very appropriate word. And that was all that was needed to say. And it cut. And it makes a person think. When their heart is filled full of anxiety, a kind word, a probing word, a word that makes you think, maybe that's what needs to be said. I appreciate you listening so well to what I said today. They're not my words. It says that when you meditate upon the law, you're a happy man. I love my job. I get to meditate upon the law frequently behind a mower or behind a fertilizer cart or behind a sprayer. I enjoy it very much. So I appreciate you letting me basically give a book report of what I read. We're going to offer a gospel invitation. This invitation is for those who want to accept Christ, who want to find some brotherly affection, who realize that, you know what, life is pretty tough. And they realize that I need a helper. I need something. I need hope. Because there's something better than what I have. And it's that hope. It's that hope of a home that outshines the sun. If there's anything we can do for you today, come forward. And maybe if you're scared of coming forward, I'm always open. Chances are, I've been there and I've done that. And I'm going to try my best not to make you feel more horrible about yourself than you already do. If there's anything we can help you with, anyone in this congregation will help you, but if you want to come forward, you may.